This is Classic Business on Classic 102.7 in Gauteng and Fine Music Radio in Cape Town.
Well, now we have in front of us, or should I say in front of me, one of the leading independents. Well, should I say one of the leading independent analysts, or should I say the leading independent analyst in South Africa? Because in terms of the recent Financial Mail ratings that came out, you were right up there. I mean, there was only the big merchant banks. I am talking, of course, about Anthony Clark, who's a Cape Town-based, but he's up here, and he's visiting a number of companies. And this is the third time I've seen you, Anthony, in the past few days. Familiarity does not breed contempt. Which companies have you been looking at, and what's really struck your eye in the past few days?
Yeah, hello, Chris. It's quite nice to be in Johannesburg for a change. And as you said earlier, you've been in the country for 40 years. I've been here 25 years. And here we are in studio, a Welshman speaking to a Scotsman. So it's quite interesting being here. I came up this week for a couple of key insights. The first on Monday was with the CEO of Astral Foods, the country's largest chicken company. And then you and I today were at an iconic construction materials company called Afrimet. And tomorrow I'm playing catch up with, let's just say, interested parties regarding Omnia, which has been in the news recently given the share price collapse and the scandal regarding two misleading statements allegedly by the company regarding its rights issue. And just generally looking around us and seeing what's going on in this very tight, difficult economy.
If we could maybe just have a look at Afrimet. I mean, I found this to be absolutely fascinating. It's a company that I've liked for a long time. And I think it's probably, and I don't know how you feel about this, but probably misplaced in the sense that it's in the construction sector. And yet, if you look at it, the real action now is coming out of commodities, and specifically iron ore. One thing that bothers me a little bit is that with this very, very elevated iron ore price, it's very good for Afrimet, make no mistake. And this is a really well-run company. But once the iron ore price comes down a bit, aren't they perhaps in danger of losing a bit of the shine?
Absolutely. Now, this is a company that has never put a foot wrong regarding its transactions. And I've been tracking this company since its listing a decade ago. And I was the first analyst to visit their Demmenang iron ore mine a couple of years ago. And I was very impressed by what I saw and the efforts management made to rehabilitate the mine and to make it extremely profitable very quickly. As an example, last year the company lost 33 million rand, and in this year's results it made 200 million. Granted, that was on the back of a surging iron ore price, but let's not forget that the real benefit to Afrimet in that surging iron ore price only came in the last quarter of their last financial year. We are now a few months into their new financial year, and I've been forecasting extremely good results for Afrimet on the back of iron ore, and as we heard today, a recovery in construction materials, and specifically in the industrial minerals silo. But regarding iron ore, you know, we've seen problems internationally with Vale in Brazil, which caused disruption to the international supply chain of iron ore. We heard today that Rio Tinto was cutting back their own production. And perhaps, as the CEO, Andreas van Heerden, said, perhaps the price will be stronger for longer due to ongoing international demand, specifically from China, which seems to be trying to pump its economy to keep that country going. And, of course, cutbacks we've seen internationally, which has kept the iron ore price, I think I checked this morning, was $121 a ton. This time last year, it was probably $50 or $60 a ton. So Afrimet's going to have a fantastic first 6 months. And I think the market is missing a trick here, but I completely agree. If the price were to start coming off, Afrimet is looking a little bit exposed. But as I mentioned today, hopefully by then, the construction materials side and the industrial minerals side will start to counteract some of the boom we've seen in iron ore in the short term.
Now, you know, the way you're talking here, it's wonderful. You don't get this kind of, you don't get this passion when you talk to analysts who are perhaps in a more structured corporate environment. And I think maybe that's because you are independent and you can give a proper independent assessment. But we were chatting this morning. It's not an easy job. I mean, you're getting out there regularly. I mean, you're up seeing, what, half a dozen companies while you're up here. You're not hanging around. So the life of an independent analyst is not a cozy one.
No, it's you unlike the large brokers and the large banks, which have unlimited budgets and, in theory, the power to open up doors. As an independent analyst, you actually have to use your reputation and the network that you've built up, in my case, over 25 years. And having covered one sector, which is small to mid-caps, probably longer than any other analyst in this country, what that brings is a sense of credibility and a knowledge base which CEOs and companies actually value, because you walk in through the door looking at things objectively with a very independent view. You're not coming to sell them some loan or some structured product or some form of financial product. You are there to analyze the company and to give the underlying investors who I service, the institutional market, unfettered, independent opinion on a daily basis. I spend my entire life, day in, day out, knocking on doors, visiting companies, whereas most other analysts at most stockbrokers are generally tied behind their desks, crunching numbers in their Excel spreadsheets. That's not what I'm known for. I'm known for going out there and getting next week's information today.
Oh, I love that. That is fantastic. So look, you've mentioned Aframat, you've mentioned Omnia, but what else captures your interest at this point in time? I mean, if I had to put you in the spot and say, what is your pick amongst the small to mid-cap companies?
Right now, as many of your listeners know, I follow the soft commodities and agricultural sector very, very closely. And we've seen with the rising price of corn or maize in the US a dramatic impact to the local SAFEX price of maize, which is the key input ingredient to many food companies like Astral Foods and Chicken Feed, Quantum Foods, RCL, and of course Pioneer Foods, which has had a detrimental impact to their margins. Now, when I look at companies, I'm looking much, much longer term. And I'm forecasting if the harvest next year in this country in terms of maize starts to rebound, and the early indications are from 11 million tons this year, we could be between 14 and 16 million tons next year. Now, if the American situation sorts itself out, there could be a dramatic decline in input costs for many of the key food manufacturers that I follow in the small to mid-cap space. As we saw a few years ago, when the maize price fell to 1,800 rand a ton, Astral Foods, as an example, saw a massive run in their earnings, and the share price ran up from 100 rand to just shy of 350 rand in 18 months. Now, they've all been battered in the last 12 to 18 months because of rising input costs and problems with electricity and even latterly water. Now, if my prognosis is right regarding a lowering of input costs next year, some food companies like Astral, Quantum, Pioneer, and RCL could see nice rebounds in some key areas. So I'm telling the listeners right now, it's too early to look at these companies, but at some point in late quarter three, early quarter four, if my prognosis is right regarding soft commodities for next year, my pick of a sector right now would be Astral Foods. It's too early to buy. Do not run in. I'm warning you right now. But if I would see the price in the 140s, to use my wonderful analogy, I would happily sell my grandmother's kidneys to buy the stock and lock it in for 12 to 18 months.
Okay. You know, looking at the large cap companies, there are very few instances in my experience where the price relative to where it should be, the price that it's trading at, is out of kilter for far too long. That's not the case in small and mid caps. And what you've just talked about, do you see that quite regularly? That there's this big price differential, or should I say value differential, between what you have valued a company at and what it's presently trading at?
You know, the key thing about the market as we see right now is there's a lack of coverage of a small to mid-cap sector. There has been for many, many years. You know, I'm probably the lone wolf in the sector, given I cover in total over 70 companies, some a lot closer than others. And because of that lack of coverage and the fact that many institutional investors simply do not have the resources to cover them, you get complete aspects of what I call value traps, where because the stock is unloved, uncovered, unlooked at, if something were to suddenly happen to the upside, the market often misses it. So this fallacy that the market is the most efficient machine is not true in small caps. You physically have to go out there, kick the tires, look management in the eye, and actually grab the company by the horns and say, how are you doing? You simply can't allow the market to value the stock for you. So I'd say yes, there is lots of value traps, but you have to do the work to get it.
And if anything, that situation is probably going to be exacerbated with the application of things like MiFID II, if South Africa decides in its infinite wisdom to adopt that. And the coverage of these small and medium caps is going to be even less than it is currently.
Yes, I agree. You know, I think as I stand right now, without blowing my own trumpet, I think that as long as there's demand and interest in small to mid caps, and the key thing is its history. You know, having covered the sector for 25 years, you know, you've got that depth of relationship and knowledge with a number of companies, and it's very difficult for a new entrant to come in and to try and try and capture that market because they don't have a sense of history. And as you and I both know, as old lags in the sector, knowledge, respectability, and reputation go a long way in tough times.
Well, from one old leg to another, Anthony Clark, thank you very much indeed. And thank you also to sound engineers and Mata Batata Radebe in Joburg and Mwanda Lobe in Cape Town and producer Andries Mhlangu. Salman Mohammed up next for you in Cape Town and Gauteng Carlin Steyn up next with Winding Down. Michael Avery will be back with you tomorrow. Thanks for tuning into the Classic Business Show, which was brought to you by Altron, technology partners in your digital transformation journey. For more information, visit altron.com. Altron, there when it matters.